Now, if you could just go into school and describe, what it was like going to school.
Well, of course, when I started school back in 1913, there was only the one school at that time, the Lamar School, which was being built, was called the East Ward. It was being built at that time, but we all went to the high school, and it was just the only one. We had one big auditorium that after we got up in what I guess would be the middle school now, or junior high, that when we had all classes, we went to it. But with our teachers, we had one teacher for all subjects, except when we did get to high school and had Spanish and chemistry. But we all had all turned loose on the playgrounds at the same time for a recess period. We had to line up. And our teachers are just were not the young group like we have today, young modern group. They were what we thought were old maids, most of them were spinsters. They were underpaid, and but I'm sure they were good teachers, because some very intelligent people came out of those schools and went on to better things. And they did teach Latin at that time, which later they didn't. We had a choice of Latin or Spanish. And when we got to high school, but then they built the East Ward School, and I think that was the first Ward School. In fact, I'm sure it was that was built, because later the Plato School was built. But I guess we were overcrowded is the reason that they built them, because it didn't make any difference in those days how far you lived from school. You mm-hmm. just got there. You weren't bus, you were walked. Mm-hmm. You brought your lunch. You had a lunch hour, but if you lived too far, you brought your lunch. Most kids brought it in a syrup pail, and they brought just, we didn't have sandwiches. We didn't have, so many people didn't have loaves of black bread, and never any mayonnaise, so they had cold biscuit in their lunch. I used to be fortunate enough to take bologna sandwiches, and I had a friend that was just quite well-to-do, and she had money to go buy her lunch, and I never had any real spending money, but my mother would bake bread, and then we'd have, and I'd take a bologna sandwich or two bologna sandwiches, and she just thought that was just really gourmet eating, so she would give me a dime every day for one of my bologna sandwiches. And then I'd have 10 cents to spend when the ice cream man came around. He would come around to the school. But of course, everything was crude compared to what we have now. But we did get to school the best way we knew how. If it rained, and I think it rained an awful lot in those days, well, they didn't let us out at noon at all. They would keep us right straight through to 1:20, and then they'd dismiss us to go home, and we'd wade home through water up to our knees. And busing was just something we never dreamed of. We knew we had, the school was there, and it was just up to us. And we had friends that lived in the country as far out as 3 or 4 miles, and those kids walked both ways. That was the only way we had to go. We didn't know any different. And that's why I think right now, sometimes I think busing is, well, I guess it's all right. I shouldn't even make a comment on it. Because, but I always worked, and I always got to work the best way I knew how. I didn't have transportation furnished, and I always went to school the same way. And when you think of when they built the college in 1925, when they started that, how far out that was. That was an awful distance, and there weren't too many cars in those days. It was a rare thing to have, for everybody to have, like you do now, have 3 or 4 cars to have a family. And it was a rare thing for a family to have a car. So the college was a long ways to walk. The people either walked or they had to live out there close by. But I guess they were good schools because we didn't know the difference. The same way with the road conditions. The streets weren't paved, and we didn't know anything else. We just put on boots and waited because it did rain a lot. And it was the only way we had to get around. Everybody had raincoats, everybody had boots. And now we have no need for them because it doesn't rain. We have automobiles. So, but it took so long to get any place. And I know one time we were going to a track meet when we were in school. My sister was always in the in speech anyway. She was, I can't even think what to call it now. At one time they called it elocution, but then she was in the speech tryouts, and we were going to Corpus Christi, and one of the coaches had a car, and he took us over there, and we got over there in 2.5 hours. But when we came home, we were fighting to tell our mother that Mr. Hawthorne had driven to Corpus Christi in 2.5 hours. We knew she would never let us go again, to think that go with a speedster like that. And really, doesn't that sound outrageous? Yes, outrageous. But we came back with some kids. Their family had a car, and this boy and I went together some, and my sister and his sister were along, so they came over in their car the next day after this meet. And so we came back, and it took us nearly all night to come back. We couldn't leave there until after the meet was over. And I think we must have got home by 3 o'clock in the morning, but we didn't get back in 2.5 hours like Mr. Hawthorne, the speedster, got us over there. But the roads were terrible. The same way with going to Rivera Beach. That was another big place to go. But the road conditions were such that you had to allow yourself an hour and a half anyway to get down there, and maybe 2 hours. Of course, you were very lucky if you ever went with a boy that had a car. It wasn't his car, it was his daddy's car. And if his daddy was fortunate enough or good enough to let him have it, well, we always had a bunch that went. We never didn't anybody ever go by themselves, because, you know, it was, they'd take a crowd with them. And we did go an awful lot and had, I thought, an awful lot of fun. At least we thought we were having. There's a title here about farming. Well, the crops have changed, though, because there used to be so many crops between here and Corpus Christi, and they were the vegetable crops. Spinach was a big, one of the big things that they grew, spinach and cabbage and onions, and you could just have them for going up there and picking them. Of course, the crops around here have changed, so now that's a big thing is grain, where it used to be cotton and vegetables, truck farming. And I can remember the first, it says, the industries. Well, I don't know if we even had any industries or not, but I can remember the first gas well. It was east of town. Of course, it was a sight to see. If you had a friend that had a car, it would take you out there. And it was 5 or 6 miles out toward where the naval base is now. Well, we'd go out there, and it was just blowing all over the country. Well, that was just really a sight to see that gas well, but I don't think it ever did come in as an oil well. I think the first oil wells were after the Humboldt took over, but that gas well was there from up until that time. Well, we either cooked with wood stoves or corn oil stoves or gasoline stoves, and once in a while, a rarity of an electric stove. And I don't know, it just really and truly, it just doesn't seem possible that so many changes and advances have been made. But they just really have. Just right here, it says banking and stores. I think we were better off with stores then than we are now. There were stores all up and down Clayburg, which was Main Street, and nice stores. And of course, there's still stores up and down Clayburg, but that was the only place that there were stores, and we had 2 or 3 banks. We always had 2, as long as I can remember. Then we had the third for a while, and the bank from Rivera moved up here. So I think we've always been, you know, very fortunate that way with the stores. But then again, so many of us were railroad people, and we had passes, and there were trains running, and we could go to Houston, we could go to Corpus Christi and do shopping. And that was bad for Kingsville, because people had cheap transportation that way, and they would go out of town to shop instead of shopping here, when really and truly I think Kingsville had just as much to offer. But still, it was the fun of going to Corpus Christi. And now I shudder to even think about it. I'd rather not go to Corpus Christi at all for any reason. But it used to be just something to look forward to every week, because we could get on the train and go over, and everything was right downtown. And, oh, just, we thought it was wonderful to go to Lichtenstein's and different stores. Perkins was up on the block. And, of course, now we just are almost afraid to get out of the car if we go over there. And we take the back road and go out to one of the shopping centers. The train schedules were wonderful. We could just go anywhere. Of course, I worked for the railroad for so many years. There were just hundreds of us young people working at that time for the railroad.
What type of work were you doing?
What kind? I did compound work and typist work and accounting work and timekeeper, and you just name it, and crew dispatcher. When you work 36 or 40 years, well, you just cover a span of practically all kinds of work. But of course, we started out mostly as compound operators and or typists, but we had these passes, and we just didn't think anything of getting on the train here on Saturday night. And of course, everybody wore hats and gloves and our best dresses. We'd sit up all night long on that silly train and get to Houston the next morning. And we'd walk downtown and spend the day right downtown in Houston. We'd go to Rice Hotel cafeteria and end up with six or seven salads and probably not a meat or a vegetable, but our eyes were huge. We were all just country girls. And then we'd go to a show. They had marvelous theaters then right downtown in Houston.
They had what built, time period are you talking
this
about?
Is in the 20s. In the 20s, they built some beautiful theaters in Houston. The Lowe's and the Majestic and one other, but you could look up and see the stars shining, you know, and then the moon would rise and come over, and oh, we just thought they were just marvelous. And they had stage shows part of the time. Yeah, well, here we were, actually sitting up all night on that dusty train with the windows up or the windows down, whichever way it happened to be, and we'd go to church downtown. The First Methodist Church is right downtown on Main Street in Houston, still there, and beautiful church. We'd all go to church. We never thought how we looked, and I'm sure we must have looked very wrinkled. But like I say, we all had gloves and hats. You never went anywhere without that type of attire. And then we'd go to walk down to Rice Hotel, and here we'd eat this big meal, and then we'd go to the show, and then we'd go to St. Regis candy shop and buy the pecan cakes. They made them. They're like pralines, but they're great big things. It's a wonder we didn't all end up sick, but we were young and healthy. And then we'd get back to the station and get on that train and ride all night, Sunday night, to come back here to go. We got here at 7 o'clock or 7:20 to go to work at 8 o'clock the next morning. The train was late sometimes. We never had time, of course, to change clothes again. But we just thought we had an awful good time. If we didn't do that, but we went to the Valley. At once a month, there was a group of us that we couldn't afford it, but just once a month. Mm-hmm. And we'd go to the Valley, we'd go to Brownsville, or we'd go to McAllen. The train went on to Mission. But we'd get off at McAllen, eat lunch, and then the train would turn around and come back. And we thought we had an awful good time. And like I say, there was train service most anywhere. We could go to San Antonio and go out, have time to go to the zoo, go out to Breckenridge Park and go to the zoo, because they had streetcars and they had buses. I think we always rode the streetcars in Houston and in San Antonio, and still sit up all night and come back and go to work. But it was, everybody else did it. We didn't know anything else. Raids and bandits. Oh, way back. In 1916, we had bandit trouble. I don't know whether you girls have been told of it. Well, it was pretty close. It was at Norris, which is about 60 miles south. And then they burned a bridge. They burned the ranch house, or attacked the ranch house down there. And I think they burned a bridge south of town, or they thought that they were that close. But the ranch, the King Ranch, had a huge searchlight on top of the house that rotated, and every night they turned it on, and it just made a full swoop over town. You could just pick up a pin out there in the street when it came where you were. That was their way of searching, where now they go in helicopters, you know, and try to flush them out. But anyway, they never came close here, any closer than that. But we were very frightened. We did sleep in one room. All families would gather in one room, and Daddy would have a knife or a gun or something, just like we do now, the lawbreakers, but for an entirely different reason. And but they never did come very close. And of course, we had the sheriff, and had the rangers used to come through. We could see them, but we really had very little trouble, I think, in Kingsville. Very little trouble of any kind. I don't recall any until, you know, the last few years. And we haven't had it very much now. Very little compared to other places. I think we all do a good job of living. And at least we try. Churches and preachers and revivals. Well, any church that had a revival, that was something big to go to. We went to every revival, regardless of what church we belonged to. And of course, we had big tents, and they had evangelists that just came periodically, you know, every year. And there'd just be huge crowds. And Dr. and Ms. Chandler, Ms. Chandler is still here. But when the Baptists had it, well, Ms. Chandler always played the piano, and Dr. Chandler led the singing. And it was just wonderful music. It was just wonderful. And everybody went to the revivals. And then there was one type of religion that used to have a tent or a gathering in the north part of town, and they talked in an unknown tongue. Well, that was our Saturday night occupation. If we didn't have something else to go to, was to go down there and listen to them. And of course, I often wonder now why we did, but at that time we just couldn't see that as religion. We just thought it was a show. So anyway, we went down there and watched.
Could you describe or remember any weather extremities?
Well, of course, the hurricanes I can remember too very vividly. One was the 1916 hurricane. I was a very small child at the time. But it was, to me, the worst one we ever had, and the first one, I guess, that we ever had. And it was just tremendous. My daddy put the piano in the middle hall, I remember that, and moved the piano in there, and we all gathered in the hall like this hall is here. It went through the house. It wasn't this house. And we all gathered in that inner room, more or less, and I think my sister and my little brother and I slept. I'm sure we did. I've heard later my mother say that she didn't sleep a wink. And of course, it was a very disastrous storm. Then in 1919 is the storm that destroyed Corpus Christi, and we were over there and would have been there that weekend, but the place where we stayed, always stayed out on North Beach, was leased, and people were coming down from the north to take it, so we came on home, or we would have been there that weekend. And the man that owned these cottages, called Moravilla, very good friend of ours, was drowned in the storm. And so many people that we knew were, because they were not afraid. It was on North Beach, and they were not afraid. They had lived through the 1916, and the water hadn't come in, but that was most disastrous. And my dad was working here for Allen Burnger Company, so they sent for him to come over there, because people were just everywhere. Everything was destroyed out on the beach. And he did work as a mortician at that time. They called them undertakers, and they needed help, and they needed help even to build caskets, that was boxes. So he went over, and he got permission for us to go over. He was under martial law, so we went over maybe the second week. I don't recall whether it was, or maybe the first week, it must have been the second week. But we stayed down in Allen's Furniture Company downtown on Chaparral Street. They're not even there anymore. But upstairs, slept up in the show window, because there was no place to sleep. Most places downtown had been damaged or destroyed, and of course the beach was gone, every place we had known. And North Beach used to be a lovely place to live. And we had always stayed out there. So it was all destroyed. And we would beachcomb and would walk out there. All the sights that we saw were horrible. But he stayed there, I guess, a month. But we all had to be in and off the streets before dark, because they had the soldiers. It was under martial law, but they were huge timbers of poles, creosoted poles from Florida, Pensacola, that had been blown clear across the Gulf and washed up on the out there. And one thing I found that I kept was a Victrola record. Of course, they were big in those days, and it was just twisted like a piece of paper. And of course, had no way of ever knowing who it belonged to, but it was a Red Seal record. But oh, it was just terrible to see the disaster. And of course, like I say, there were just hundreds of people drowned. I don't think that they ever found, because they were washed ashore on the other side. And but I do remember those two, of course, that we've had recent storms. And in the 30s, we had a real bad storm on, I think it was on Labor Day. And then I remember Beulah not too many years ago. So we have had some real good storms. We were in Houston when Carla blew in, and it was much worse up there than it was down here. We were on the north side of it. And it was a very disastrous storm. But 1916, 1919 were really hurricanes.
Would you like to comment on the doctors and the medical practices?
Well, of course, there were several doctors here, and we thought they were all good. You had your family doctor, and he doctored you for everything. It didn't make any difference. You know, they delivered the babies at home, and they vaccinated the kids. They took care of the parents and the children, and it was just one of those things. They were general practitioners, and there were any number of good doctors, and whom we thought were good doctors. At least they... the patient survived, and that was a whole lot. And they had come here with at the very start of the town, some of them did. And then some others came later, and like I said, working for the railroad, we had to go to certain doctors, certain company doctors. And we always, I thought, had very good doctors. And for a small town, and the hospital, I don't remember when it was built, because I was fortunate. I never did have to go into it until 1932 was my first experience. No, I guess 1930. So it was a fairly good hospital at that time. And I have preferred it ever since to any hospital I've ever been in. And I still think Kingsville have good doctors. I prefer them to other doctors. So I still try to go to them. But when we talk about epidemics, we did have the flu epidemic. Of course, that was 1918. That was horrible all over the world. And then after the World War I, when so many of them came back, they came back with the itch. So many kids had, I don't know what kind of itch it was called. I can't recall now. But I know it would break out between the kids' fingers. And, oh, we had to be so careful because you could catch it so. And I remember that kind of epidemic. Of course, we had measles and we all had all those diseases when we were kids. We were not immunized against them. And we didn't take shots. If one person in the family got the measles, well, everybody else just sat down waiting for their turn. You got the mumps, whatever it was, the whooping cough, everybody was going to have it because that was what, well, that's what everybody else did. That's all we knew. And my mother didn't call the doctor for every little thing. And I know my husband said that his mother just simply raised them on cod liver oil and turpentine as a rule for cut places, you know. And they gave them cod liver oil and Chamberlain's colic cure if they had the stomach ache. And I think that's just about the way we did. We just didn't run to the doctor for everything. We had aspirin for headaches. I do remember that because I always had headaches. So I can remember always seemed like having aspirin. However, I think I was here before aspirin was. I feel sure I was.
How about the festivals and celebrations, weddings and so forth?
Well, I don't recall too many weddings, except I do recall the wedding, one wedding at the ranch. I remember that when one of the Claybrook girls married. It was a big wedding. Used to people would just get married. That was it. They didn't have too many big weddings like they do now. But I do remember the wedding at the ranch, and I remember the Castro Carter Hotel being built and them having a grand ball for it. I remember that. Of course, in those days, they didn't have babysitters. So my parents dressed up. And I remember what my mother wore. I think I was 7 years old at the time, or maybe 6 years old, but I remember her blue satin ball gown, which was beautiful, and blue satin slippers with pom-poms on them. And my daddy was a beautiful dancer, and they had a dancing contest, and I remember watching him. He and my mother didn't dance together, but anyway, he did come out as one of the winners in the waltzing contest, but we all went. But the kids went. You dressed the kids up, and you sat in a seat up next to the wall, and you just sat there, and the parents got ready to go. But I can remember that. And of course, they used to always have celebrations on 4th of July. They'd have big picnics. And then, like I say, we'd go down. They'd have excursions out of here on the train. We'd go down to the beach, down Rivera Beach. They had the train that ran from Rivera, Texas, down to the beach, to the pavilion down there. And that was a big thing to get to go there. And if you didn't go on the train, you'd go in the car later. In the 20s, but it seemed like there was just a lot of things to do, and maybe not so many people, but they all just got together. And square dances, I can remember some of the square dances, and then other dances. They had beautiful dances up in Plato Hall upstairs, where Dr. Caligley is now. They had an opera house, and they had plays up there. And every town had an opera house, and that's the way towns were built. They had a big hotel, or two big hotels. And because people would come in by train, and to get people to come to settle there, they had to have a place, a boarding house, a rooming house, or a hotel, and then they'd always have an opera house for the entertainment. But they had a dance place up there, and they had beautiful dances. I never did participate in it. That was when I was a child, but then later, well, they had the American Legion Hall over on Clayburg. And I've been to dance many a mile, many a dance over there, because that was... I could say I grew up in the roaring 20s, and that was during the 20s we had lots to do. Well, we thought we had lots to do. We didn't, anyway. that was the thing. There was just lots of activity. We never had to worry about we could pick a show, or we could go to a dance, or we could do something like that and get together at somebody's house. Everybody had a piano, nearly everybody had a Victrola, and always had some good dance records. So you could just go. Our home was open at all times to any of our friends. So we just, my mother and daddy liked to dance, so we just danced up a storm. And we'd go to Sunday school and church, and we'd go to BYPU if our friends went to BYPU. If not, I belong to the Christian church, so we'd go to their fourth league. But if there weren't any young ones going to their fourth league, we'd go where the young ones were. And they always had sponsors, and we'd have picnics, and... like I say, I think it was just a lot, really, for a small town. And it wasn't very dull. It was safe. We felt safe. And, oh, my dear, when there was a fire, everybody went to the fire. And when the high school burned, it burned about 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock, I guess. It was cold. It was January, I think, early February. But everybody got up and dressed and went to a fire. You just never let the fire whistle blow, but you go out and look, and if you saw it, well, you just started to the fire, which now seems utterly ridiculous. I can't imagine why we did it, but we did it. And I remember when the high school burned, of course, we were all standing and crying. And I lived on Clayburg Avenue and with a group of girls, and one girl was to graduate that year. And I was working, and her sisters were working, and we were standing out there in our bathrobes and watching the high school burn and crying, and some boys came by and we'll go to the fire. Well, we all piled in the old Ford, and we cried and we cried. Well, they cried because it was their high school too. And there were hundreds of people at that fire. It's like they were, well, they always at any fire. We used to have some big fires. We went to Houston one weekend, and the whole block along on 6th Street from where Allen's Furniture Company is now, up to where Raglan's Western Shop, that was all wooden building. But that burned while we were gone, and we came back and we were furious to think that that was the weekend that we chose to go to Houston and miss that fire. Isn't that ridiculous? You all are just making me go way back and think of things I haven't thought of in so long. I just cannot. Oh, dear. Proverbs, riddles and jokes, I don't know. Psalms, oh, my dear, I knew every psalm that was ever written. And we just sang constantly. My sister could play anything. I mean, on the piano. She played by ear. So if a new song came out in an hour, well, she knew it. And we had records, and we just played and we sang. And we'd get on the train, and we'd start singing from the time we got on the train till we got to Brownsville or wherever we were going, to Houston or to Corpus. We'd get in the car. We didn't have radios in them, you know. We were our own radio. The minute the wheel started, we'd start singing. And we'd sing and we'd sing. And of course, I had always sung those songs. And when my son went off to graduate school in 1953, he got his degree out here. Then he went to Ames, Iowa, the graduate school. And they had an ASCAP program on television. I think Ed Sullivan had it. Well, here they came with all these songs, and there he was, 21 years old, and he said, all of a sudden, it dawned on him, here I am, just 21 years old. How come I know all of these songs that they're singing? They were recognizing all these old writers, of course, Irving Berlin and different ones that had written songs. Well, that's what he had grown up on, because he'd been rocked to sleep. He had to go to sleep to keep from hearing them, and because we had sung them to him. But as far as cowboy songs and things like that, I don't know any of those that might have been, you know, around this part of the country for ranch songs. I just didn't know anything about that, because I never was on a ranch, and all I knew was what I was in the country, but at the same time I was in the town. And the fiestas, oh, now the fiestas were the big things in September. I don't think they ever had them in May. For Cinco de Mayo, but is it the 16th of September it's your big celebration? Well, I know that that was, we could hardly wait for the fiestas. They didn't play bingo, they played keno in those days. And each square had a picture, a diagram and a picture in it. Of course, they would call it Red Martinez and his brother, I can't think what Nick, whether it was Nick Martinez or not, but Fred anyway. They would roll and pick the numbers out of there. And the only thing I ever learned, I took Spanish, but mariposa, isn't that a butterfly? Yes. Well, I could. On the ear and 32, well, it would be mariposa. Well, that would be the butterfly. That's the only time I could put the grain of corn down. But we used to win some wonderful things. We'd come, well, there'd be a bunch of us. It was always a group. And we'd come out of there with 5 pounds of sugar and 5 pounds of flour and a big basket of fruit and, oh, all these things that we didn't have. Of course, we just had a room. Most of us were just girls with rooms, but we were staying with families or something. Anyway, we always had something to do with them, but that was the big things, that fiesta. And, oh, they had wonderful tamales and things, and then, of course, they'd always have, usually with the fiesta, they'd have a carnival. So many times the carnivals would come that time of the year. So, we went to carnivals too.
How about the speech and grammar change?
Well, darling, I don't know. I started out talking like a Texan, and here I am as old as this, and I still don't sound like anything but a Texan. I'm sure there have been lots of changes in grammar, and because my children have lived different places enough that they don't sound like I do, thank goodness. But there were, well, I still think that, of course, we were taught grammar and we were taught phonics and things like that. So I don't think that there were so many changes in my generation. I think maybe two generations back, because people did still say ain't and things like that we were taught not to say, and we were taught not to say can't. Because to try to say can't instead, and there were a few things, but like I say, whatever I said, it still came out Texan. Didn't make any difference regardless of what I said. It just came out that way.
Okay. And you remember your thing about telephone, early telephone?
Well, You know, not until about 22 or 23. I don't ever remember the kind with the crank on them. And there were those kind, but I never did use one, not here. Now, over in Louisiana, we moved over there one time in the 30s, and they still had that little crank of a thing, and I never did figure it out. But we never did. I don't ever recall it here. Of course, I can always remember way up even into the 40s that we had operators here, you know, because my children would... My little girl would get on the phone after we came back in the 40 one time. She got on, she said, she picked up the phone. She said, I've got to talk to my mommy. And they rang the office and called me to the phone. So we had that personal touch to way up in the 40s. But I don't recall the cranking, but they had the telephone office, of course, and it always amazed me. I always wanted to know how to work those boards. Not till this day have I ever learned how a board was worked and how they could make the connections like they did. But didn't everybody have one? We got a phone about, I guess, in 1922, 21 or 22. And it's the first one that I remember that we had. And so we were, my sister and I were getting to be grown girls. I mean, teenagers then. We thought we were grown.
Legends, superstitions, any ghost stories?
No, I don't know a thing. Never did see a ghost. No, there are lots of legends, I'm sure, around, but they were not in my day and age. We didn't believe in them. We thought we were too, what, blasé, I guess. I don't know what we thought we were.
You didn't have any superstitions?
Oh, well, yes, 13. I'm very partial to 13. And every time I see a football player, a baseball player with 13 on his uniform, I'm so glad. I feel like he's one of my favorites because 13 has been one of my favorites. But and a rabbit foot. I used to carry a rabbit foot when I was about 5 years old. Daddy took some I was hunting. And one of the boys in the group, about 10 years old, got around behind me and held a gun, and we shot a rabbit. Well, I saved the rabbit foot. And in later years, when I was about 16, I started going with a young ball player, a local boy, but he was playing baseball. And he was very superstitious, so I gave him a rabbit foot. It had been preserved all those years, and he just started doing just fine. Now, I never saw the rabbit foot after that, so I think that would be the only superstition, but I don't think black people used to have, because my grandmother has written ideas that they had, you know, and beliefs that they had, and I don't recall anybody like my mother or parents having beliefs like that.
The only one we haven't touched on now. The daily work schedule
and merchandise offer. Well, our daily work schedule, like I say, I worked at the railroad, and of course that was the days before the union when I first started, and we had a certain amount of work to get out. Well, it was just up to us to get out. We worked from 8 to 5, but if your work wasn't out, well, it was just too bad. So many a time I've gone to work at 7 and worked right straight on through until 7 that evening because I had to work. I had to have a job. And like I say, we didn't know about organized labor. Later on, well, unions were organized, and we still had 8 to 5, 7:30 to 4:30, but we were paid for overtime then. But we still couldn't loaf on the job and let it stack up. And the overtime had to be authorized, and under just like getting blood out of a turnip to get overtime. I never wanted it. I always felt like when I put in 8 hours. But and the shopping, like I say, everybody used to, if possibly could. We'd go to Corpus Christi and go to Houston and do shopping. However, I've always thought Kingsville was a good place to shop. And matter of payments, I guess we all did the same thing. We just paid. We got paid twice a month, and that's when everybody paid. They'd run with the checks over to Raglan's and give them part of it. And the time you paid your room board, that's all there was in those days. It just wasn't, just very little left over.
What was the mutual savings? salary?
Oh, dear, I think when I first started out, I still have a timekeeping book back in 1926, which hasn't been even 50 years ago. Save $110 a month, but they did go down as low as $38, $48 a month. I think I started for about $48 a month, and I worked awful hard, probably harder for that than I did later. And 110, 114, 125, but the girls were paid the same as the men. We didn't have any discrimination in the railroad. And then later, of course, our salaries were real good. And because the railroad pay has always been, I think, above what the normal pay was for anything else. But of course, we worked for it. We didn't goof off. Because if you did, it was just too bad. But you didn't get paid twice a month, and everybody just worked and paid on that schedule. That was the only thing, the only way there was to do.
How about the housing facilities?
Well, we're very poor. Very few people own the houses. Now, this house, my husband's father built it in 1913. My husband grew up in it, and then when we came back here, we were gone there for 10 years in the 30s. We left in 34 and came back in 43, latter part of 42. When our children grew up in it, we bought it from him, and our children grew up in it, and of course then we have grown old in it. But some people were substantial enough to own their own homes, but the majority of us just rented. There were rent houses every place, or you rented rooms, or you lived in a boarding house, or you lived in a rooming house. Just hundreds of people did that. And even during the war, like World War II in the 40s, it was almost impossible. It was impossible to build, and it was almost impossible to find a place to live. That's why we bought this house and let these people stay here for weeks and weeks and weeks, the people that were in it. And we stayed with my husband's mother and daddy in a big old place up on Clayburn. It used to be up there where Campbell's Motor Company is. It was torn down. It used to be a great big old place there. But we stayed with them, trying to give these people a chance to find a place to live, and I think they finally just had to move into a shack after 2 or 3 months. But of course, we've lived here now over 30 years, so I've never liked to move well enough to have to move, but I know that there were just rent houses every place, and very few, you had to be quite substantial, and very few people owned their own homes. I say very few, there might have been more than what I thought, but there were an awful lot of rent houses. Well, we always sang just whatever happened to be the latest, which would be now would have been like on the hit parade. And of course, in the 20s, well, that was the good jazz music that came out. And the ballads before that, there'd been tearjerkers before that. During World War I, they had marvelous songs. And Tipperary and Over There and the George M. Cohen songs in World War I. And one of our favorite songs, and I have recorded it on a cassette that I have. Of course, I have no background music. It's a cappella, and it's called Put On Your Slippers and Fill Up Your Pipe. You're Not Going Bye-Bye Tonight. And I preserved it for posterity because I think that my children and I are probably the only people in the wide world that remember that song. And it was a song we had a record of back in, World War I. But like I say, we had these records, and then we'd learn the songs from them. And my sister could play just anything, and she did play all the time. She couldn't wash dishes because it would ruin her hands for playing the piano. So I fell there to washing the dishes, but she could play, and she did keep us entertained. But any song that came out, well, we bought the sheet music if we could. If not, we'd go down to Grant's, and they'd play it for you. And the time they played it one time, well, she would know it. Or then we'd buy a record occasionally, but we just didn't have money to throw around for records or sheet music either one. And they were both fairly expensive at that time. But everything that came out that was new, of course, during the 20s, they had beautiful songs like Sleepy Time Gal and My Blue Heaven and Yours and Mine and Melancholy Baby and just could sit here, I guess, and think of a thousand of them. If right now they just won't roll off my tongue, but they were all just real good music. And Lonesome, that's all. There were just some good ballads that came out. And My Wonderful One, that was Paul Whiteman. And then later on, of course, the swing came in the 30s when the swing music came out. But they've, I still go back to the older ones. And I can remember back when I was a child, I had an uncle that sang a lot, and Irving Berlin's earlier songs, one of his was When I Lost You. And it's a beautiful song. He wrote it in 1911. And every time Ed Sullivan or Lawrence Welk will feature the Irving Berlin songs, they never came up with that one, which I thought was one of his prettiest songs. I always have Remember and Always and so many of Berlin's other songs. But finally, one time, Joe Finney sang When I Lost You, and I just love that. And then, of course, Meet Me Tonight, Dreamland, and Under the Silvery Moon, and Down by the Old Mill Stream. There were just hundreds of songs. They didn't go out of style like they do now because we didn't hear them so much. It's repetition now. A song is worn out before you even get a chance to appreciate it or learn the words to it. Of course, the church songs that we sang, so many of them are coming back now, but we just sang the same old church songs over and over again. We didn't get new hymnals. We just learned them. We didn't even have hymnals. The grown people, most of the adults got the hymnals, but if we wanted to sing, we just had to memorize old church songs. I know one time, I think my sister was in college, and one of her teachers said something about, she just knew that she didn't have anybody in that room that knew the words, all the words to a hymn, to a church hymn. My sister said, well, I certainly do. So she said, well, all right, you just sing one to prove it to me. And it tickled her because we had to learn them because we didn't have enough hymnals to go around. So I don't remember what the song was, probably Blessed Assurance. And anyway, she just stood up and sang it. She knew every one of the words, but we just laughed about that because in this college out here, Miss Mamie Brown, but she got the biggest kick out of it because she could sing most all the songs herself, but she just said people didn't memorize and didn't learn. But the clothes, we always, of course, everybody had to have a new dress every payday if they were going someplace. And that's about all we got. Maybe we wouldn't get one every payday, but we'd get one quite often. And we started to, it must have been in the 20s that we started cutting our hair. Up until that time, most of us had long hair. And probably about 1920, maybe 22, some of us lasted that long. And but we'd wear these old bulky dresses then. We were wearing long dresses and heavy bulky sweaters that came way on down. Everybody had to have a heavy bulky sweater. I never could see that, or a cape of some kind. But we were dressed up. But wear beads like we do now. Just ropes and long beads. Then we got the dresses up to the knees, above the knees, roll the stockings below the knees. Well, Sunday school party is about the only thing that I remember going to, because anything else was a dance, you know. That was if we went around to dance, and then we didn't have to play any games. We'd play fruit basket, turn over and spin the bottle, and or different things like that. I don't really recall. I do know one time we were having the best time. We just lost track of what time it was. And I don't know why this lady, where we were, why she didn't come in and tell us to go home, but we were having the best time, and there was, of course, a lot of boys and girls both there. And our Sunday school teacher was there. And all of a sudden, it must have been midnight, and we should have been home at midnight. Well, somebody came to and said, oh, we should be going home. And we looked out and here mothers were coming from that direction, coming after us. My mother had walked to come after us. However, my sister and I were with a boy who was going to walk us home. But some of the girls didn't have, weren't enough boys to go around. But like I told you, we were going groups, but this one boy was going to walk us home. Well, we had several blocks to go, but my mother had waked up. Probably 10:30 or 11 o'clock, and we weren't home. Well, she just put on her bathrobe and started out to put out. And never shall I forget looking out. I think that was the taxi party because we had just had more fun. I remember that, and this lady never did come in and say, now you children should go home. And when we got to the door, here were three or four mothers just coming from all directions. So we went home, and I think the next time we had a Sunday school party, we were cautioned to get home at a reasonable hour. I don't know, it really wasn't that late, but it was just funny. But we just played parlor games, who you're with, where you're at, what you're doing. The three different ones would come around and give you an answer, and then you'd have to stand up and say, who you're with, where you're at, what you're doing. Now, that's talk about grammar? Well, that's it. That's good grammar. Well, like I said, I thought they were good, and I didn't know anything else but good feelings. Only thing, we were segregated, but it was because the three different parts of town, and the schools were located that way. They had built the school in the north part of town, and one in the south part of town, and then the one in the middle part of town, and you just went to whatever school you were closest to. And because it was, I can't even remember when the high school became just the high school only. I just don't recall. Must have been when Plato was built, but of course at that time I was well out of school, and I don't recall that. But it was just whatever part of town you lived close lived in, well, that's the part of school you went to. And we didn't know what the word discrimination meant. And as far as racial trouble, we had none. My mother would had a hotel for a couple, 3 years. And if, I know one time that she had a Mexican woman, had a little girl, and she brought her. She had a Negro woman that had a little girl named Gladys. I never shall forget Gladys. And we had, my sister and I were a little bit older. Well, and the boy gave us somebody to play with. My mother said, certainly bring them. And because up until that time, my sister and I had just played, just the two of us. We didn't know what it was. We were little things. We didn't know what it was to go someplace and play. So there were the four of us. We played together. Well, why not? We had the best time ever. And then mother and the two women worked together because they had, there was lots of work to do. Like I said, they were, in the early days, you had to stay at a hotel or a rooming house or a boarding house because the only accommodations, and my mother had at one time, the hotel had 32 rooms and bedrooms. And I think she said that there'd be 125 to 150 at mealtime there. Well, that takes, it took a lot of work. For everybody. But I was young enough at that time, I don't remember to recall too much about it. But then later on, well, I roomed one place and ate at a boarding house someplace else. Then just had a ball. We just loved eating at a boarding house. But everybody else did too. That was just a way of life that you don't even hear of anymore. We didn't know what a cafeteria was until we went to Houston and found that one in the Rice Hotel. And then, we, like I told you before, we just went crazy. Okay.
Where exactly were you born?
I was born in Fort Worth. And my mother came from Mississippi. And by wagon to Fort Worth, and she lived that number of years. My dad was born in Cook County, and in Gainesville, Texas, which is just north of Fort Worth. And his mother was, I'm a third generation Texan, but we have five, as it happens in the family. Our daughter's married to a Marine colonel, and of course they've lived everywhere. So she had to have three little children, and one's born in Hawaii. And then when her husband was going to Vietnam for the second tour of duty, she came home, for the first tour of duty, she came home to Texas to have, she was going to have this baby. So she could have a Texan, so that makes Chris as our fifth generation Texan. But we lived in Fort Worth until the latter part of 1912. I remember my fifth birthday in Fort Worth, but I remember my daddy wasn't there. He had come to Corpus Christi. Some of my mother's people had moved down there, so we moved, I'm not real sure just when, in 1912, and came on then over here, and went to work for Allen Furniture Company, so then Allen's and Corpus transferred him over here. And
so that you were born in 1907?
I was born in 1907, I think you said there was depression that year too. So what else is new when they say there had a depression? I was born into one and I had one following World War One. That I know times were awfully hard. And then I lived through the big depression in the 20s and the 30s, and because that was terrific. And we were young married people, and both of us had a job, but then that song came in, another song came out, that tomatoes are cheaper, potatoes are cheaper, now's the time to fall in love. So they told us it was cheaper to have children then, and we'd been married nearly 6 years before our son came. But we thought, well, we weren't getting any younger. Maybe we'd better start a family. Well, then the hard times really hit. So I know all about the Depression. That I can remember very vividly. And of course, it was very rough on a lot of people. But we were younger, and we just didn't realize how bad it was until we would see some older people. I know my dad had it awful rough because he was an older man then. But up until that time, when my husband and I had both had a job, and then it got so bad that he would lay off a week out of every month and give a man a week's work anyway. And then I quit completely. And gave a man a job so that, because he had a family to support, I thought, well, let's go ahead and get busy and have this baby then. And so, of course, you could buy, that's when they tell you could buy a huge round steak for 25 cents, but no one had the 25 cents. And now, of course, they have the money, and the steak's awfully expensive, but then if people just didn't have the quarters, or half the dollars, or whatever it took. And
it was just pretty tough going. What was the usual amount of change you had to carry around with you until payday?
Oh, yeah, I don't know. A dollar or two was just a whole lot of money. You mean back then? Yes. Oh, I had $2 or $2.50 left out of your check after you paid your board and room. And maybe paid down on a dress, if people paying out a dress hadn't will call. Well, 2.5 would last you till the next payday. Maybe if you had to pay it, well, if you had to pay board and room, and of course you had to have cleaning, and we didn't have drip dry things then. We had to do our own laundry, most of us did. And in our rooms, or pay to have it done. So there really wasn't very much. No, when you think about it now, I wouldn't walk out of the house. And to go out to the garage, but you had more than that. But that would buy an awful lot. It just really would. Like I tell you, 25 cents would buy a big round steak. Or we'd go to Corpus. There was a hamburger stand, and they had beautiful hamburgers for 5 cents. We'd drive over there, and we'd get hamburgers and root beer. That was a Sunday afternoon ritual. And then we'd drive, go over to the frozen custard place. It's like Dairy Queen. And I think that must have been 5 cents a dish, probably never any more. But you could get these wonderful hamburgers, triple X root beer stand, for 5 cents a piece. So money just didn't have the value that it has now. No, we could go to Houston and go to a show and eat out. And we never thought of ever getting a room at a hotel just for the day, of course. We just walked the streets up and down. There's always something to do. Now I'd be frightened to death to try to walk down the streets of Houston. But at that time, we didn't think anything of it. And we'd go to a show and like I say, and eat out and ride the train. I didn't cost a thing to ride the train up there back, and maybe buy a sandwich for a supper. And well, $3, $5 bill was a big deal. That sounds a little ridiculous. Yes, it does. The times has changed.
What year did you marry?
Oh, I was married in 1926. I was 19 years old.
Was it a big wedding?
No, it was just went to Methodist minister in Corpus Christi, and we were married, and that was it. And then we went to San Antonio on a wedding trip. We stayed most of that week. We were married on Monday, and my parents were living in Corpus, and then we came back to Corpus Christi and stayed, and then came back. We had to go to work the next Monday. We both had a week off, and that was it. No, we surely didn't have a big wedding. We just, but we've had a good marriage, let's put it that way, before 9 years this year, if things work out all right.